Welcome to Vermont Movement News, Volume 3, Episode 2. This is our second episode after a long hiatus. We felt that the recent wave of bigotry and the anti-CRT and anti-trans panics needed to be answered strongly. Daryl Lamont Jenkins, the executive director of One People's Project, is today's co-host. In this episode, we will be interviewing Melissa Grandi Stotts. Melissa was a social studies teacher who works at the Dyer Elementary School in Burlington, Wisconsin. In August 2020, a few months after George Floyd's murder, Melissa taught classes about racism in response to questions from her students about the murders by police. A right-wing Facebook group eventually caught wind of the lessons, and a slew of harassments and death threats began. Her story was covered by PBS Wisconsin Education and NBC News. The links will be in the show notes. Welcome. Daryl, can you introduce yourself?
Hello, everybody. My name is Daryl Lamont Jenkins. I'm with One People's Project. We're an anti-racist organization based out of New Brunswick, New Jersey. And you can find us at onepeoplesproject.com and idavox.com. Idavox is our news line, named after Ida B. Wells. So our name is a threat to these people. So, and that's why I'm glad I'm here today. As I was coming up, I grew up with a family, in particular my father, who insisted that we learn our history. He was a teacher. My mother eventually became a teacher. She was a nurse. And it didn't really take any prodding, too much prodding in order to get us involved, because I loved history. I still do. And there are aspects of history that isn't being told out there. And in recent years, we have seen that they really don't want us to teach that history. I mean, we used to talk about it as kind of like a conspiratorial speculation kind of thing, but now they're telling us, we don't want you to teach this history. So I'm really curious. I'm really looking forward to this conversation. So Ms. Stotts, please tell us what exactly happened in your classrooms and what kind of opposition did you have to the work that you were doing?
Sure. So I actually had just started teaching in Burlington, Wisconsin, my hometown. We had moved back from Chicago. And so it was in my first week of school. We live very close to Kenosha, Wisconsin. And in that first week, Jacob Blake was shot by police in the back. And it was, I mean, we have kids who have family in Kenosha. One of my students, she went to the dentist shortly after that happened. And they were hearing and seeing the protests happening in Kenosha and seeing like buildings boarded up. And so they were asking a lot of questions. So I decided that we needed to do our social studies lesson the next day and just talk about racism, talk about the Black Lives Matter movement that they had been seeing happening all summer, and just kind of discuss like, why is this happening? So we started with a book. It's called The Kids Book About Racism. It's a really awesome book that just kind of explains it to kids. And we, you know, sat in a circle, just had a discussion. I live in a predominantly white town. So there were, though, a few students of color in my classes, and they, you know, willingly were just sharing some of their experiences with racism, or maybe like their uncle or their dad or family members, and just sharing it with the class. And their white peers were very like, couldn't believe what they were hearing. You know, they're like, what? Why would someone say that to you? Or why would they do that? And so we started off just broadly talking about, you know, what is racism? And then we started discussing Black Lives Matter movement. And I had like a handout that I gave them that I found, you know, on a teacher website the night before, and kind of was trying to use that as like a jumping off point. Like we'd read a paragraph and then talk about it. And that particular document is what got people very riled up. It went home with a student and they showed their family, and no one reached out to me, but within a couple hours of school ending, I got a phone call from my colleague who said, oh, you need to get on Facebook. Someone posted your lesson and everyone's going crazy. It was in like a local buy sell trade group. Within minutes, like there were just hundreds of comments on it. People like that I have known my whole life, you know, I'm seeing their names popping up on there. And just some of the things people were saying was just disgusting and really disheartening. I mean, after I scrolled a little, I'm like, I can't look at this. So put that away. And I waited to see, I figured I would be getting a phone call from my principal or the superintendent. And I didn't hear anything all night. And I went to school the next morning. Mind you, you know, this is all through the night, like getting more and more people. And I went outside to pick up my students in the morning and bring them in. And I saw my superintendent like standing outside. And so I thought, okay, I'm getting talked to today for sure. And my principal and superintendent came in during my prep time and kind of just had this conversation with me, you know, what was this lesson you taught? Why did you do this? Basically told me, we wish you hadn't. I mean, they said those words. They said, we wish you hadn't said Black Lives Matter. You know, people are getting really riled up. And they said they needed to put out a statement. And they asked me to, you know, give my own statement, which I provided them. And then they ended up not using it at all. They really didn't use any of my words. And superintendent just very poorly worded this statement he put out to our community. He said, you know, that this was not an approved lesson. Teachers are not supposed to be sharing anything political or one-sided, and just really like fueled the flame, I think, for what some people in the community were saying. So after that statement went out, it really went downhill. That's when parent in the community created a Facebook group that was solely dedicated to like people joining and trying to figure out how to fire me. It was called Parents Against a Rogue Teacher. And so I was able to get a couple friends who joined the group, you know, pretending that they were a part of it. And just, you know, they were all calling me a terrorist and a Marxist and a child abuser and all these different things, and just discussing all the ways they could, you know, show up at my school and protest, what they were going to do at the next school board meeting, how they could get me fired. Lots of lies, like said, I got fired from my job in Chicago, and that's why I moved back to Burlington, and just, you know, a lot of awful things. So we did have a school board meeting coming up in a week or two after that. So it went from, you know, usually there's a few people at school board meetings, and there were about 300 people in the audience there just to talk about my lesson and what I did and why I should be fired or why I shouldn't be. And thankfully, I am part of a anti-racism coalition in my community, and the people in that group were extremely supportive, and they started kind of combating some of the hate online and posting, trying to get people there in support of me. So that really helped. So that school board meeting, I actually ended up having about half the people who spoke were in support. The other half were very much not. And it turned into a couple hours of public comments of people just going back and forth about my job. And I mean, ultimately the school board, they made a statement and said, you know, I wasn't going to be fired for this one lesson. But that's kind of when like the media picked it all up, and it really still continued to, I just continued to get harassment. I mean, people were talking about like how they could show up at my house and just all these different things. My husband like went and bought, you know, security, like lights and alarms for the doors and things. We started to get nervous, like some of the things people were saying. And I tried to go to the police, and the police in our town were not supportive either. They said, you know, well, they haven't done anything. This isn't harassment. So it got to be a pretty scary situation until finally my principal or my superintendent, he realized, I think he got a lot of negative feedback from our families of color in our community about the message he had put out and how, you know, his wording was awful. And so he ended up putting out a new statement saying, you know, that this is not a two-side issue. There is no neutral ground, like Black Lives Matter in our community and to our school district. And that really helped. That really started, at least locally, people kind of started leaving me alone a little bit after that. And so that's, I mean, my school year continued to be very difficult. Teachers made it difficult. Parents made it very difficult, but at least like the harassment started to die down at that point. So we at least felt safe in our community, or safer.
And like I said, before we started talking, I'm pretty much flying by the seat of my pants here because I don't know this story. However, so I'm going to ask questions that, you know, that will inform me as much as anybody else that's watching right now. One of the things that I'm curious about is that, were there any hate groups that were involved in any of this, like such as the Proud Boys or the Oath Keepers or something like that? Did any of them start speaking out against you?
No, and I mean, at least not that I know of, that anyone was a member of. And this happened, it was now just about 2 years ago. So it really like seemed to be a little early, like for all of this, the anti-CRT and everything. Like it was, and I think that's kind of why like national media picked it up, because it hadn't blown up yet. So I think I started right after this happened to me, I feel like within the next year, you know, I started hearing like, oh my gosh, a lot of people like this is going through, but our community seemed to be like a little early on the hate and the bigotry. So, but no, I just had like individual people, you know, reaching out and saying things.
And so we're 2 years out now. It's been 2 years since that. And you said that things have calmed down a little bit, but it's still raw. It's still a lot of, you pretty much, have you ended up becoming gun shy to a lot of the things that you, or has, I should say, has the school board administration been gun shy in particular? I mean, what kind of things have they done to make sure that they don't see this kind of drama? Because I'm sure they must have done something to prevent this from happening again. And what have you seen since this incident?
So, well, one thing like directly that's impacted me is I was asked to no longer teach social studies anymore. I was a social studies and an ELA teacher. And now this year, this past school year, I only taught ELA. My superintendent at first said that
ELA being,
English language arts. So like writing, reading, phonics. And so my superintendent at first said, you know, I think you should think about like not teaching social studies, to step away from that, maybe step away from the criticism, maybe parents will leave you alone more. Kind of made it, trying to make it sound like it would be beneficial for me personally. And I, you know, then said, I don't want to do that. Like I love teaching social studies. He said, okay, well, it's not actually going to be, I'm going to make the decision for you. Like, I don't think you should be teaching social studies anymore. So not allowed to teach social studies anymore, which there are still many ways in reading to teach kids same types of things. So, I mean, that hasn't really stopped me. We don't get to do as much like current events, which I got to do a lot more in social studies, which is sad, but there's still many ways to bring in lessons and bring in history into reading. We, our district partnered with the National Equity Project because we've had a lot of complaints about racism in our district. The Department of Public Instruction in Wisconsin actually like opened an investigation and deemed our district to be a hostile environment for students of color. So we've had like a whole plan that they're supposed to be following to improve the culture of our district. So they've definitely though like made it, I think the lack of support that I got has really scared off teachers from doing anything. And now everything that's in the news, of course, is scaring teachers too. Like people ask all the time and professional, like, are we going to get more professional development? How, you know, how do we know which books we can choose? And our, unfortunately, I think our district is, you know, has done a few things to that have been beneficial, but it's just so slow. Nothing is happening. So I think that just overall, the teachers in this community, because of what happened to me, are just scared to do anything. Like everyone's afraid that that's going to happen to them. I mean, and I like was written up by my administration, you know, in my file. So I think that also was like a step they took to try to deter anything from happening again. We don't really have a union in Wisconsin. Our, you know, years
really?
Ago.
Really?
Yeah.
In Wisconsin, you don't have a union in Wisconsin.
Yeah. So, yes.
Wow. Wisconsin is known. It's known for its labor movement.
Yes. So Scott Walker, when he was in power, you know, he basically like Act 10 got rid of all of our, the teachers unions. So we do not have, we have like a union, but it's not, not what you, what you expect from your standard teachers union. They don't really have much power. So, and not many teachers are even a part of it. So
Marina, do you have that?
What was that?
I was going to ask Marina.
Oh, yeah.
Scott Walker did his best to remove unions. And in Burlington, Vermont, we had a protest when he came to the local hotel. The AFSCME union and AFL-CIO protested against him.
Hmm. And that brings me to the other thing. We're talking about Scott Walker. He's been gone for pretty much, I would say, what, 4 or 5 years now?
Yeah.
Yeah. And for, unfortunately, as all these things seem to happen when you have some really rabid right wingers controlling things, the aftermath lasts for a good while, which brings me to this year is an election year. You might get a new senator. Are you dealing with a new governor this year, or is it going to be next year?
Next year. Yeah. Next year.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So, and from somebody who was outside of Wisconsin and has only been there once in life, I'm curious as to what the political climate is right now. We see that things, like I had said before, this was a bastion of labor in Wisconsin. I remember just before Scott Walker even came in, I remember there was kind of like an they occupied the Capitol, they occupied the State House there, mm-hmm. just before Walker came in. And it seems like now there's a little bit of a struggle. And what we're seeing right now, we have probably one of the worst senators in America, Ron Johnson. Mm-hmm. But he's up against Mandela, what's his last name?
Mandela Barnes.
Mandela Barnes, who looks pretty good.
Yeah.
Who looks pretty good, and he might win. But what does the climate say? Because there's also another factor, and I don't know how much he figures in, but one of the biggest power brokers to come out of Wisconsin that pretty much made all of this possible for the right is a guy by the name of Ryan Priebus, because he caused a lot of damage to progressive efforts, and not just in Wisconsin, but also in the federal government. Mm-hmm. So what does it look like now politically? How active are progressives in the state right now?
I think, you know, we have Milwaukee and Madison, and you have people who like those areas where it's, there are a lot of activity, it seems like, from progressives, but then you go anywhere else and it feels very conservative. I mean, my community, I see signs everywhere. It's just, and I feel like I kind of was living in La La Land, because I'm so convinced like we were going to get rid of him, Ron Johnson. And I'm like, I don't know now. I drive around and all the signs I'm seeing are the opposite. So I don't know. I think that the like overturning of Roe is maybe going to help, because I think that that there are a lot of angry people now in Wisconsin. Like, we have a law that's from the 1800s right now, and nothing's happening with that. Like, we, you know, abortion is illegal here. And I think that that maybe is working in liberals' favor. We'll see. I know there's a lot. I mean, even in my very small conservative community, a lot of angry people. So that gives me a little bit of hope, but I don't know. It's scary. This is a scary state sometimes.
Yeah, because we're learning, we're pretty much learning the geography of Wisconsin due to right-wing lunacy. I mean, we have Kenosha, we have Waukesha, and I hope I said that name right.
Waukesha, yeah.
Waukesha. And okay, I'll say it right from now on. but in Waukesha, that wasn't even a political thing. They made it political by assuming that it was what happened at the Christmas parade was a hate thing, was a hate crime. They tried to turn it into that when even the police weren't doing it. But I think there was a number of things that have happened where we're just basically learning that Wisconsin needs help.
Mm-hmm.
So actually, I'm glad you came here. And it also reflects on what we're dealing with across the country, where we have people that are threatening our teachers, where we have people that are not just threatening them with the loss of job, but really with physical threats and things. And it's all because they do not want you or others to teach the history of other people, other than white men, mm-hmm. you know? And that's the only way you can put it. I mean, that's really the only way they can put it. When the other day, I was talking about the whole critical race theory thing and how it was an intentional lie to promote Black history as critical race theory
mm-hmm.
by a group that relies on what critical race theory is addressing to advance themselves, the Manhattan Institute. Manhattan Institute's whole thing was to move, as I had said on the other program, to move people to basically diminish the civil rights, the gains of the civil rights movement. It was founded in 77. And relocate African Americans out of the urban areas where they had the most political power. And then, and all of this right now speaks to that mission. So what kind, as it is something that has been going on across the country, you have spoken to it a little bit, but what kind of support have you been getting from progressives around the country who have heard all this nonsense? I understand you got a lot from the state, and I'm just curious as to what kind of things you're hearing now from other people in regards to your situation.
I definitely have had a lot of people reach out in a positive way, which has been like the best part of this situation happening. I've talked with a lot of different like colleges with students who are going to school to become teachers. So that's like very encouraging, because I know when I went to school, we weren't even taught, you know, how like about any of it, you know, that's not like what teaching was focused on when we were in college. And so now the fact that like there are universities that are trying to equip teachers to come into the field and know how to handle like having parents who are going to be pushing back against you, how to still teach the way that you should, the correct history, is encouraging. So I definitely, that part has been really awesome to see and to get to connect with future teachers and like just discuss like what it's actually like being in a situation like that. Just people, definitely teachers from all over the country reaching out and saying, you know, thank you, this is inspiring. It's helping me to like feel confident to do this in my classroom, to have these conversations, or they've already gone through something similar and just to have like, you know, this happened in my district, it'll get better. Like we just have to keep fighting. Just having kind of that camaraderie has been really great. I've definitely gotten some great opportunities because of people hearing about this. I got to take part in a fellowship last summer, like with some other teachers, and just learning more about like culturally responsive teaching and how to continue, you know, teaching in the right way and, you know, be better for my students. So there are definitely a lot of people in our country who want to do right by our students, a lot of teachers specifically who are trying, and that part has been really encouraging and helped me to continue, you know, to teach the way that I know I'm supposed to teach and to try to, you know, continue to push back and my district and the parents around who, you know, don't feel the same way. So a lot of educators.
Incidentally, we do have people in Fond du Lac that write for One People's Project for Ida Vox.
Oh, really?
Time. So, and they do write about your more rabid characters that are in the state. The most recent article that we've written, going back, incidentally, to the Roe v. Wade decision, the recent article that they're written, that's on Ida Vox now, I just published it yesterday, is about the pregnancy health centers. It's about the, you know, the fake abortion clinics. And it talks about, and they talk about how damaging physically and mentally those centers have been to the state in particular, to that state in particular. And like I said, it speaks to what we are all facing. So my question is, and this might be a little dangerous because you don't want to send the signal that there might be some more drama ahead for some folks, but I want to know what your future is going to be. Where are you at mentally? And I guess strategically, that's a good word.
Yeah. You know, it's something that I feel like I struggle with, and my husband as well. Like, I feel like every other week I'm like, we're moving, we have to get out of here. It's tough being in this city, in this state, a lot of the time. And so I always come back to like, if no one does it, like, how's anything going to change here if people don't stay? And so, I mean, as of right now, I'm still staying in this district. I'm going to keep teaching. I'm going to try to like make my little bit of change within. I'm finding more, and the longer I'm here, I'm finding more like-minded teachers and more like-minded families, and trying, to make it better.
I would like to go a little further with this. You did say there was an anti-racist group that came to your defense. Are they a group that was online, or are they a physical organization?
We're a physical organization. It's called the Burlington Coalition for Dismantling Racism. So BCDR is what we go by. I had already been in the group before I even went back to teaching. I took a few years off of teaching to raise my kids when they were little. And I had joined the group. One of the mother who started it, she, very similar, I don't know if you listened to the South Lake podcast, it sounds like our school, like, or in our story, it was a family, a Black family. The kids were just experiencing terrible racism in our school district. And the mom tried to work with the school, with the principal. Like, she tried to do, you know, what everyone says you should do. You know, she went to meetings constantly. She was trying to come up with ideas to make things better, and just nothing ever improved. So she made this organization, and, you know, slowly we started to grow, and we have, I think, probably about 20 active members now. We have more that are in the group but don't really come. But we have, you know, biweekly meetings. We host different events. We do some things with the school district. We host a Juneteenth event in our town. So that has definitely been very helpful mentally, and just having people who are passionate about the same things and who think in similar ways in this community to be able to like get together is really amazing. So that's been very helpful with staying here, you know, finding that community within Burlington. Unfortunately, the mother who started the group, she actually ended up having her family had to leave Burlington because they were just feeling so threatened. We like raised some money to get them out of Burlington because it was just, a couple of people, the same people who were harassing me, one of them, like, he was showing up at her daughter's work. Her 16-year-old daughter, like, worked at a pizza shop. He would show up there, like, just really scary stuff.
This person?
The woman, her name is Darnisha Garbade, and she now has moved, you know, out of the community, but she's the one who founded the organization, and she's still very helpful. You know, she still helps us.
Talking about the person that was harassing.
Oh, who was harassing? His name is Matthew Snorek. S-N-O-R-E-K.
I think we have written about him.
Oh, probably.
He's out of the okay. Yeah, he has a I think we've had some drama concerning Snorek in the past, but I can't speak to that completely. I understand that he was a candidate for town chairman.
Yep.
And he was. It doesn't look like he did too well in that. So if that's the case, I mean, people already are aware that he's a scumbag.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep. He's
Marina, do you have anything to add to any of this?
Well, I was going to, way back in the union discussions, I was going to talk about the teachers, the Wildcat teachers strike in West Virginia, and wondering, because West Virginia didn't have teachers unions. So perhaps something like that needs to happen in Wisconsin to try to bring back the unions, because they're, once they outlaw stuff, the only way you can work in to further go is outside the system. Has there been any moves to do something like West Virginia?
Not that has made its way to my knowledge. I haven't heard anything since I've been back in Wisconsin and teaching in Wisconsin. I haven't heard any move about any movement. I mean, that doesn't mean it's not being discussed or happening, but it definitely hasn't made its way, those discussions, to Burlington. So I don't know. I mean, we need to. I feel like so many teachers say that all the time. Like, we just, you know, it's a lot of words, but we have no action.
How far are you from Madison?
About an hour and a half.
Because I understand Madison was and is the headquarters of the John Birch Society. Do you see any influence lingering from their decades of right-wing organizing?
Yeah, I don't hear much in Burlington about that.
I noticed that, has any, like, Democratic, I'm going strictly to the party in this case, any kind of Democratic elected officials spoken about the conditions of the education system, especially in regards to the whole critical race theory canard? What kinds of things have they been saying? I mean, it looks like they're trying to do something if you're going to have somebody like a Medela Barnes as your standard bearer for the Senate. But matter of fact, what is Medela Barnes saying? Let's introduce him to the world here. What kind of person is he?
I mean, honestly, I don't know what he said on CRT, like in teaching in general, and that's something I should know as a teacher. I mean, he definitely is a progressive. Like, I've you know, seen his talking points, but I'll have to look up his thoughts on that. But luckily, we do have Tony Evers, and he, you know, was in education. He has said, you know, that we need to be teaching history, real history. So, I mean, you do at least hear it in Wisconsin. There are people saying how important it is, like, that we're not whitewashing history, and that we are teaching the way we should be, in what, you know, what kids need to know, the real life. So, I mean, we do hear a little of it, but you also just have so many very right-wing parents and politicians just so against it and saying we're brainwashed. I mean, we just had a school district not too far from us ban a book that they've been teaching in, like, a high school English class about Japanese internment camps. And, like, they said that it's too sad that they can't teach that anymore. We have another school district very close by that now said no pride flags in the classroom and no pronouns. Teachers can't have pronouns on their email signature. And just, so, I mean, there's a lot of crazy stuff, and it's making its way closer to us. So our district has made many, you know, they've made a lot of comments about how we are an anti-racist school district. We're working towards, you know, equity. So I have to hope that something like that won't happen, but it's crazy here.
Well, it's interesting. I'm in Jersey, which is supposed to be a rather liberal state. I never grew up. I didn't know a thing about the Japanese internment camps when I was in school. I never knew anything about it until I was in the Air Force. Mm-hmm. And I was able to, and it came kind of flooded into my radar for some strange reason. And I think it's curious because, I mean, you're talking the 80s, and I was always curious about how things were during World War II over here, because we always talk about it over there. And No wonder we didn't know. So it's not surprising that you do have that kind of fight. They don't want to talk about Japanese internment. And especially, they have especially decided that they were going. Oh, I know how I found out about it. I remember how I found out about the Japanese internment. They was calling for reparations back in the late 80s. It wasn't when I was in the Air Force. It was after I got out of the Air Force. And a guy named Morton Downey had a TV show. And it came up when they was talking about reparations for Black people. And when reparations, and they said, well, what about Japanese? They've gotten the reparations for the internment camps. And Morton Downey says he didn't agree with that. And I was like, well, what the heck are they talking about? And then I looked it up myself, didn't have internet, so I had to run over to the library and there were no books on it. I had to find the library. Something.
Oh my.
Yeah, it was 1989. and I was able to find something, and that's how I first found out about Japanese internment, but I had to do the legwork. Mm-hmm. And that's another thing that comes to mind. I work with somebody who puts together kind of like an alternative school, like a radical school and things like that to teach where public schools cannot. Not necessarily a charter school, not necessarily a private school, just a school so that, you know, provides supplemental education, so to speak. Has there been an effort to do that, at the very least online, to help kids learn?
Nope.
I didn't. Yeah, because it's something that I've been seeing in recent years. It's basically a case of taking the bull by the horns.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Well, and it's funny that you say that, because I was yesterday, we had an event in our downtown, and I went and there were a few parents there I was talking to about the exact same thing. We were saying, we're like, can we just make our own school? Like, where we can teach our kids, like, what we want to teach them. And maybe it'll be a little more diverse than, like, most of our schools, you know. And but, I mean, yeah. It's
maybe after this, after we're done talking, we can connect you with the person who has the alternative school down in Kentucky.
Sorry, my son. My husband's supposed to be watching. My son, please go.
Mommy. Hey, it happens.
I'm sorry.
Mommy, I don't.
At least they're not dancing in the back. Oh, well, now they're in the foreground. We are waiting as she plays her role as mom.
Yes. I apologize. He's supposed to be kept downstairs. I came and hid upstairs in my room hoping that they would stay away, but
it's all good. Look, you're a parent.
Yes.
And this is one of the things that's really important about what we're talking about today. You are a parent too.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And they are acting as though you're just some activist and terrorist who doesn't care about what's going on in their community, when this is all about caring for your community. And you care because your children are living in it. Your children are going to school in it. And you're not going to do anything to harm that community, you know. I mean, right. This is not what it's about. This is not about some sort of agenda. Your children, your students are asking questions. That's what I'm hearing. Your students ask questions and you answered.
And they're interested. They want to know. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're kids. They're so curious. And
really, what that brings me to a question I definitely would like to know. How did, how did the school district approach the concerns like that? Things were happening all around you. We brought up Kenosha, Waukesha, And other kinds of things that have been happening in recent months, how have they been addressing the concerns of students? I mean, what grade do you teach? I missed that. What grade were you teaching?
Fourth grade.
Okay, you were teaching fourth grade. I don't even know what it looks like in the high schools in regards to this issue, but how are they addressing it with their younger students?
They're not.
They're not.
Yeah, they're not. If the student says something, they just say, oh, you know, talk about that at home, ask your parents, or yeah, they're not addressing it. Mm-hmm. And there was no like district wide, there was nothing sent home like to parents or anything like us, like when Jacob Blake happened. I mean, obviously kids are going to be talking about it. It's right next door, but there's just no communication at all.
So you had all these flare-ups that were happening and there was no discussion. Obviously there was discussion because the kids were asking you.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just curious, were any of those kids asking because they were directly affected, i.e. they had family in Kenosha?
Yes. Yep.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. Or business, their family had businesses there, or what, you know, they're have a lot of them had connections to Kenosha.
Wow. Wow. Mm-hmm. And the school board decided that they didn't feel that they needed to address it. What about the city town council? There was nothing.
No.
And Burlington is predominantly white.
Yes.
Assuming, yes. Mm-hmm. Okay. So, wow. Like, yeah. I said, I'm flying by the seat of my pants, but I can take to, it's like, I had questions. I have questions, and you answered a lot of them for me. I think that it just showing everybody exactly what it is that's going on, but what we are at a loss with is, what are we going to do about it?
Yeah.
I mean, right now, the only thing that everybody knows to do is go out there and vote in November, but it's more than just that. First of all, we can't rely on just the vote, because who knows? We may still have Ron Johnson.
Exactly.
We may still have a majority. We may still have the Senate set up the way it is. You know, you don't know what's going to happen in the next election. Mm-hmm. Marina.
Yeah, I mean, in Vermont, the primary is coming up on August 9th, and I'm actually going to vote in the Republican primary to vote against some of the most repugnant of these candidates and try to. Vermont still has some liberal Republicans, and I'm going to vote for them. Then in the November election, I'll probably vote a little wider, go for mostly the better to the Democrats, and there's some socialist candidates that I'll probably vote for if they're safe to vote for. I mean, that's what I'm thinking. But personally, we have to go a lot more than just voting. I mean, I was in town in Newport, Vermont the other day because the high school students were having a protest regarding all the school shootings, and I was scared that they were going to get attacked by some of the more rabid types in Newport. I was pleasantly surprised to see it was mostly supportive, but I was scared for those kids. And there was the kid leading it was a Black high school student, and I'm frightened for her year. Sort of what I'm thinking.
Incidentally, I have pulled up Mandela Barnes's website, and he has on the list of priorities fighting inflation, lowering taxes, reproductive justice, a plan for democracy. And I haven't read any of these, so I want to be fair with him. Middle class tax cut, plan to boost Wisconsin manufacturing, strengthen unions, and invest in communities, plan to prioritize and empower the family farms, public safety, child care, plan to support Wisconsin small business, LGBTQIA rights, climate, healthcare, immigration, marijuana legalization, rural communities, agriculture, and again, unions. The thing that is of concern is the fact that education isn't in here.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't mean that he doesn't care. Like I said, I also haven't read this yet. But I think that might be the problem.
Mm-hmm.
education is not priority.
Never.
Despite the fact that they're attacking it right now. It should be in the forefront. And I am going to go out on a limb and assume that this is what you'll see all over the country. You will see, you will go to somebody, another candidate's website, and they will not even talk about education. They will not talk about protecting it from those who want to try to basically distort it. How does that make you feel?
not good, but also not surprised. I mean, it feels like as a teacher, we continue to over and over with like how we're paid, how we're treated by parents. I mean, just nothing about education is ever prioritized, it feels like. So it's not even that big of a surprise because it's like an afterthought, I think, even though our education should be, you know, what we are valuing most, like we're, you know, leading the next generation. But we don't care. And that's where we have huge teacher shortages. I mean, teachers are leaving left and right because you're already not making any money. And then when it comes down to it, if you're not, you know, you're not being supported by your administration, you're not being supported by parents or anyone, like, why stay? I understand why people want to leave sometimes because it's tough because it just feels like no one really cares.
Yeah. And that's unfortunate. That mm-hmm. is unfortunate. And everybody, for those who don't know, Mandela Barnes is the lieutenant governor of New York, of Wisconsin. And, he's in a position where he does have to deal with education. It's just that it wasn't jumping out at me right now. It doesn't mean that he doesn't care. It absolutely does not mean that. And I'm willing to bet that he does.
Yeah.
But back in the 70s, there was a guy named Grover Norquist who said goal was to shrink government so small that he could drown it in a bathtub. And sometimes it seems like they're trying to do that to education. They take money away from the public schools for private schools. And it, you know, this school choice thing, which is just it's a fig leaf for trying to get rid of the society's obligation to educate our young people. And I was a member of a political party in Vermont, and our platform said we support education from cradle to death paid for by the state. It's the exact opposite. They try to figure out every way to keep it away from people.
I got something on Mandela Barnes here. He wrote this on Twitter back in March. My mom was a school teacher in Milwaukee for 30 years. Since I was a kid, she has always taught me how important education is. There's no better way to invest in our future than investing in the young folks who will become our future. So there is that.
Good.
Is that. And that's important. And I, by the way, just as an aside, I'm on Twitter, so I always bug out whenever I see something trend. I don't really want to know why Kevin Sorbo is trending right now. And Rachel Dolezal underneath him. So that's just an aside. Because if you saw a look on my face, I would have to explain it. But no, that's important. That's important. That really does says a lot for me. That really does say a lot for me because that means he is going to focus on education and what people are going to do about it. And it wasn't like I doubted him. I was just concerned that it wasn't on the fair. Website, like right there. It says education. I mean, if it's not there, then you got to worry. You really have to worry. Hopefully we can stop worrying after this election, but we'll see. We'll see. But I had forgotten what I was going to say, but other than this, because there was something that popped out at me. But I do want to say, because we are running short on time, and I definitely wanted to just thank you for being here. And I'm just going to let I'm learning a lot. I'm learning a lot about Wisconsin. I really got to get out there. I'm going to try to get out there this fall, or maybe not, because you guys have snow galore up there.
Yeah, we do. Come, make sure it's October or earlier.
Yeah, we'll see. What I want to do is I'm going to speak to a student group or a college student group or something like that about my work and everything. And yeah, so I'm going to have to see if a student group is willing to drag me out there for like a day, a night or something like that.
Yeah.
So when that happens, I'll let you know.
Yeah, let me know. Come meet my fourth graders.
Indeed. I would love to. There was actually, it's interesting because in Ohio, there's a class that's put together out in Worthington, Ohio. They have, the class is kind of like a social studies class, I believe. And they just have people come in and speak to their class. And then they got to write about what they learned. Mm-hmm. Yes, they have some folks that I would not be too fond of, but they also have me, and I'm very fond of me. So, and it's interesting to see what they have said about and what they have learned from what I have said. I got a whole stack of reports from the students, and I was just like, wow, this is what awesome. Is coming home. This right. is what is resonating with them. So I'm looking forward to, so I love hearing that kind of feedback from students, from children, from folks who are going to go forward with the words that you imbue, that you bring to them. And yeah. it's kind of like, you know this as a, not only as a teacher, but as a mom.
Mm-hmm.
You know this as a mom. Fortunately, the other side knows it too.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And that's why they're coming after you, because you believe the children are a future and you're teaching them well. So I want to thank you for being out there, regardless of all the slings and arrows. It's unfortunately that you have to suffer through them, but there are people out there that got your back. Even if they don't even know your name or your situation, they're going to have your back. Mm-hmm. So don't let things get you down too much. We're here.
Thank you.
And we hope that things change for the better. It looks like it is so far, but I'm saying for the entire state, I hope Mandela Barnes gets rid of Ron Johnson. We don't need that Joker in there anymore.
I agree.
So hopefully you can help make sure, see to it that happens. And we're going to do our part to make sure that Wisconsin gets the support it needs.
Thank you.
That's all I have to say.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
You're very welcome. Marina, you got anything to say in closing?
Well, thank you so much, Melissa, for coming on the podcast. Is there anything you want to plug? Any podcasts or blogs that you want to plug on?
No, that's great. Thank you. I'm just happy to be here. I'm happy you asked. It was nice talking with both of you and meeting you both. And if you come to Wisconsin, really do let me know. I'd love to have you come speak to my kids. So,
most definitely. I have a feeling that whatever university is nearby, just let them know that I'm on the market.
Okay.
Daryl, you want to plug anything before you sign off?
Well, as I said before, you can find me at onepeoplesproject.com. We're also at idavox.com, which is, as I said before, named after Ida B. Wells, a woman that I'm quite sure folks in Burlington do not want you to know about, at least the school board.
Yeah, exactly.
And you can find me on Twitter at D. Lamont Jenkins. Idavox is at Idavox OPP. One People's Project is One People's Project. Leave out the ECT. Of course, you can go to idavox.com or onepeoplesproject.com. And we're looking for donations. We're looking for a little help to keep the lights on and us in and the roof over our heads. So we can greatly appreciate it. And this is something I keep forgetting. I also have documentaries out there and movies. So if you're interested, you can find on Venmo, look for Alt-Right Age of Rage. That's a seems to be the documentary of note these days. There is also a documentary that hasn't come out wide yet called We Don't Walk in Fear. We're working on getting a wide release on that. So we'll keep you posted. And also look for the movie Skin. It's about a neo-Nazi that I helped transition out of the white power scene that was living up in the Great Lakes area. I think he was living up in Michigan. And that's all I got.
Well, thank you very much, Daryl. And this has been Vermont Movement News, Volume 3, Episode 2. Thank you very much. Okay. Thank you.